Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, I would like to welcome you all to this program. As you know, we have three members of the seven-member Syracuse City School Board here today, and we will be talking about issues facing the Syracuse City Schools and the school board. But I'll also remind you that next week we will be talking about another very timely and important issue, and that is healthcare. In particular, Deborah Freund from the Maxwell School will be talking about controlling healthcare costs. Professor Freund is an economist. She has a grant right now. She's working on a project directly related to that, and so I hope you will join us and come with your questions on healthcare and healthcare costs. For this morning, though, I'd like to introduce our panel. First, we are familiar with Grant Reher. Grant is a professor of political science and director of the Campbell Institute of Public Affairs at the Maxwell School. And Grant will be starting the program with some questions as he does, and then we will, of course, go to questions from the audience. Three members of the board, I have you in alphabetical order, so I'll start in the middle with Patricia Bodie. Patricia has been a commissioner of education just since this January. She's new to the board. She's recently retired after 34 years with the Onondaga Children's Division. She has a master's degree in social work from Syracuse University and a bachelor's from SUNY Oswego. Calvin Corridors is currently a commercial loan officer with Beacon Federal. He has a degree in business administration from SUNY Brockport. He was formerly a vice president and president of the school board, and he's been on the board for 10 years. He's also on the boards of Excellus, the Central New York Community Foundation, New Life Adoption Agency, and he is a member of the Joint School Constructions Board. Lori Mencken, at the end, has a nursing degree from SUNY Upstate. She also has been on the board since January of 2000, and she served two terms as president. She's a member of the Joint School Construction Board also. She's also been a member of the Central New York School Board Association and has served as president for the past 4 years. She's a Board of Advisors member to Elmcrest Children's Center and a former board member to the School District Education Foundation. So please welcome our panelists.
Thanks, Sandra. Let me just say a couple words about the format here at the beginning. This isn't a debate. It's a coffee party, not a tea party. So what I thought I would do is ask questions to the group, to the table, and then let you volunteer your answers as you see fit without going through and calling on each one of you. I would just ask each of you, if this is a question I ask is something that you want to comment on, to be brief, a minute or two, and also not to feel the need to repeat in your own words what perhaps one of your colleagues has already said. So, you know, if you've got something new to add, then by all means chime in. The topic is issues facing the school board, and I think one of the biggest issues right now facing the school board concerns the structure of the governance of the system of education, and so my questions will be mostly about that, but I'm sure that others will want to ask you questions about more specific kinds of policy things, which we're leaving plenty of time for. The first question I wanted to pose is, I spoke recently with Dr. Kenneth Wong. He's the chair of the education department at Brown University, and he's undertaken a quite extensive study of school performance in the country's 104 largest school districts. He looked at 40 different states. He looked at 5 years of results. And his study compared performance trends in the district with those in the state, and it controlled for demographics and other kinds of factors. So very extensive, careful study. And his book that came out of this is titled The Education Mayor. It's published by Georgetown University Press. The key finding in all this is that mayor-appointed school boards lead to improved student performance. And the reason he thinks that's the case, as he explained it to me, is that under those systems there is less fragmentation of responsibility and authority, and that having a single office politically accountable for educational outcomes provides stronger incentives for the mayor to improve those outcomes. Furthermore, because of the other areas that mayors deal with, such as economic development, housing, safety, other city services, mayors have better experience working with limited resources and making trade-offs for better ultimate performance. I wanted to know what the three of you make of this argument.
I would certainly like to see the research. There have been other studies that have been done that speak to the contrary. As you know, we have mayoral control here in New York City, and the results in terms of academics have been questioned. you know, with that being said, I am in favor of anything that's going to improve the academics of our students. I certainly would be very supportive of that. But at this point, the items that I've read speak to a lot of issues, again, as I said before, to the contrary, that academic performance hasn't improved, as well as there's been concerns in terms of governance. You have an elected body. The seven of us focus solely on education, where there are a whole host of other issues that the mayor and the council have to deal with. You know, one such example, again, you talk about New York City, mayoral-appointed positions. The mayor wanted a particular policy in place with the school district. Some of the members that he had appointed knew this wasn't an academically sound practice, and they voted against it, and the mayor replaced those people. So, again, I have not heard of this book. I'm going to certainly look it up. I'd like to see some of the research, but the things that I have seen across the country haven't spoke to improve performance academically.
Well, I agree with Calvin, and I think I'd like to know what cities he's talking about where they've had significant increases in education performance with young people as a result of mayoral control. I think what's happened in a number of cities, in Boston in particular, Boston and Chicago do have a governing system similar to this, and the test scores in those cities have not risen dramatically as a result of mayoral control. What has happened, though, is that there has been an increase in funding to the school district as a result of mayoral control. And I think that speaks to the kind of governance that we would all like to have, a true partnership and admitted support and financial support to support the vast educational needs that we have in a large urban district. It's not an easy fix. If it was, we would have had 98% graduation rates 15, 20 years ago. But we don't. And we acknowledge the fact that we are not as far ahead as we would like to be, but it takes time. And I think that when you look at the number of issues that City Hall and the City Council has to face, as Calvin pointed out, you know, your police department, your fire department, buildings that are falling down on state interstates, and trash pickup. We're able to focus exclusively on education with over a $400 million budget and 4,000 employees and 20,000 plus students. You know, that's the opportunity that we have that we devote, have to admit, sometimes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to. And we're the ones that attend those conferences on education. We read the materials on education. And we hire and we work with professionals, people who have master's and PhDs in education. I'd like to leave that decision to those people. But I think there's still opportunities for partnership.
The other concern, I agree with Calvin and Lori, and the other concern I have is there are times when a mayor is elected who is very competent and values education and may do a very good job doing that. However, it's unpredictable because you never know who the next candidate is going to be. And so you may elect a mayor who is not as interested in education. And so it's very unpredictable, and you increase your chances of less focus on education, where when you have commissioners of education, they are focused solely on education. The other thing that I really believe would be ideal, at least in this area, is if there's no more collaboration between the elected officials and the school board, and that what can be consolidated is consolidated. I think if you meet on a regular basis, I think elected officials and the school board all have the same values and priorities as far as education goes, but we need to work closely together and collaborate. And I think that would be the ideal situation.
Well, Pat, I wanted to pick up on exactly the point that you made there at the very end, but just quickly before I do that, to answer a couple of your questions about the study I referred to, I think one of the things that struck me about it was that he took the 104 largest school districts, so it was he pretty much took the entire country in that regard. And the other thing I thought was interesting about it was, rather than looking for just pure improvement in test scores, he's looking at the performance of each school district relative to the trends in the state. So it kind of puts everybody on a level playing field in terms of evaluating it. But I want to come back to the point that you made there about cooperation. The Post Standard had a big editorial that called for more cooperation between the mayor's office and the school board. And I wanted to propose an idea here of a hybrid kind of governance system to see if this was something that might be more appealing to you in terms of the concerns you've raised. There are obviously other possibilities for governance structures, and the city of Hartford, Connecticut, for example, has a variation on the mayor-controlled system in which the mayor appoints some of the school board members and then others are elected by the city. In 2005, this mayor, Eddie Perez, named himself to the school board, so he put himself on the school board. Do you think that some kind of hybrid system like that might get towards some of this cooperation or consolidation of talent that you were talking about?
Well, I think that's certainly an option that I think we ought to all consider. What I am concerned about is adding more political, a more political environment to the Board of Education. I think we pride ourselves on being as apolitical as possible. It really shouldn't matter whether the Board of Education is composed of all Democrats or all Republicans or half and half or 4-3. One of the first things we learn in orientation about being a board member is you leave your politics at the door. You're there to do the best you can and make the best decisions based on the information and the data you have in front of you to make those decisions in the best interest of children, not in the best interest of any particular political party. And I pride myself on having that that ability to keep the politics outside the door. And I would be concerned if there were mayoral appointees for only that reason, that you would be adding another political layer to a governing body that really should be apolitical. Any of the other school districts in this county outside of Syracuse have their elected boards, and their boards are elected in May. They never really ask whether you're a Democrat or Republican. You file a petition with the county clerk or the town clerk, and you have to get a certain number of signatures, and you go around. You may put up one or two lawn signs, but the voters make those decisions in May based on who they think is the best candidate to represent them at the district level on the Board of Education.
You were going to jump in on this before, I think.
Well, I think it's possible to, you know, it may work. I also would agree with Lori that I think the school board needs to be apolitical. But I also think that Syracuse may want to try the same as the towns and villages, that it's not Democrat and Republican, that there's actually candidates that run based on their qualifications and their motivation and not be aligned with a party. And I think that would be the way to go.
Well, let me follow up on that, because you both brought up this idea of the importance of the board being apolitical, and this intrigues me. Because you do run for election, and it is, theoretically, a partisan campaign. So the public has to evaluate what the board's doing. The city council has to evaluate it. The mayor has to evaluate it. So what is a fair way for that evaluation to take place? What should citizens be looking at as measures and have in their minds when they go into the voting booth, you know, every couple of years to make a decision one way or another on some of you? The staggered elections, but how should they be figuring this out?
I think some of the questions that you're asking, have the schools improved? Do our families feel safe? Do our families feel safe bringing them at the schools? Are the school boards providing the resources? Is the school board actively involved in the community? You know, there is no magic bullet. You know, you start the conversation out and talking about the book and the school districts that are interviewed. And in some ways, you can look at that and it suggests throughout the country, school districts that look like ours, that have a high rate of poverty or high incidence of social economic issues, aren't doing well, and that the magic bullet is mayoral control, presumably. And that hasn't been the case. Urban education has had issues throughout the country with structures just like ours. So it isn't just Syracuse. And you know, Lori brought up a great observation, and Pat, in terms of you looking at this, looking at our suburban counterparts, how that structure is different, and we don't view education the same. That was an indirect way. More directly, I think, to your question, they vote us out. If you know, the part of the issue in terms of mayoral control, if you feel that the school district isn't doing a good job, there's only one individual that you can vote out, would be the mayor. In our instance, if folks are unhappy with a particular decision that I made, we passed a budget and the budget was imbalanced, or we gave raises and the community felt we shouldn't. Every stakeholder here has the opportunity to say, I didn't like that decision. For me, that's the ultimate litmus test.
Well, now I think we've had this conversation amongst ourselves over the years about the possibility of holding our Board of Education elections in May when all the other suburban districts have those elections. You know, the issue is there's very low voter turnout. There is a significant cost, and I see Ed Sesniak's here. He knows something about the Board of Elections. I know there's a significant cost to getting the machines out and getting that awareness, but I think it might be something to consider to take the Board of Education right out of those November elections. So we're not all traveling in a pack with, you know, the state legislators, the city councilors, the mayors, the judges, all those people that are running for re-election for the November election in November. And I think it would give the community a broader opportunity to focus on educational issues. I have to tell you quite honestly, when we're campaigning as Board of Education candidates, we're at the end of the table, the far end of the table for an interview process or a community gathering. And of course they want to hear what the mayoral candidates are going to say and what the state legislators candidates are going to say. And by the time, after about 2.5 hours, they go, well, now we have 4 Board of Education candidates, people are tired. People are really tired. Most of the group has gone home. So there is not really an opportunity, and we may only have 1 or 2 candidate forums that focus on public education in our city. There is not really a good opportunity to have a discussion like the 50 people here this morning about the issues facing education and how we have been addressing them for the last 3 or 4 years. So I would ask us to consider having those elections in May.
To piggyback on what Kelvin said, I think there's a real lack of understanding about the role of commissioners of education. When I campaigned, I was unaware of the amount of time that I was going to be spending doing this, the amount of learning I would need to do. And I think I can blame the Commissioner of Education role because we're not out in the community explaining our role enough. I do think that that's something that we owe the community, that there's a lack of understanding of the role, there's a lack of understanding of what we can make decisions on and what we can't. And so we need to be more visible in the community talking about what our responsibilities are. And then you can judge us on our performances once you understand what we're doing. It's very difficult to make decisions on who to elect and if we're doing a good job if there's not a clear understanding of what we're doing. And I think we owe that to Syracuse residents to do that in the future. Also to the candidates, because I had no idea the amount of reading, the amount of learning I would need to do. And I'm trying to do it, and I'm visiting all the schools, and I'm seeing the different problems. And our schools are so complicated because each school has its own makeup and its own needs. And there are 38 of them. And that's what we need to look at, is each school and the needs of the different schools.
Well, I wanted to come back with my last question to something you mentioned there about what you don't have the power to do. But I also wanted to follow up on something, Calvin, you said about the problems that urban school districts have. And this is something that's always struck me in the discussion about education, particularly in a city context, and that is that, and I guess I'll just phrase it this way as a simple question, do you think sometimes that people expect too much from the school system as a vehicle for social and economic success and mobility in the face of deep poverty and broader social problems that really no school system can address? Do you experience that as either a frustration, or do you think that that's a problem with the perceptions that the public has?
I don't. I actually think it's an area of opportunity. The reason that I ran for the board, I mean, Pat talks about all the work, and there is certainly a lot of work, and I have a full-time job. I have two children who attend the Syracuse City School District, and I'm involved in other organizations. The reason I ran, though, is because I think it's an opportunity. My family, we grew up as tax eaters. At one point, my family was on public assistance. We all my siblings, and as well as myself, went through the Syracuse City School District. And now, instead of being tax eaters, we're taxpayers. And I attribute that directly to the Syracuse City School District. We had an opportunity to get a great education. So it helped my family break the cycle of poverty. The issue is a social economic issue. Our children who have the resources are doing fine and can compete in any school district in the country. It's the kids again who have those socioeconomic issues, and that is the issue with all the school districts that that researcher did. That was the issue. So how do we reach those kids? I think we have to find innovative ways, primarily through families. I don't think it's a— is it a problem? Yes. I view it as an area of opportunity that we can turn Syracuse around through education and ensure that all of our kids are educated and that they actually want to get their high school diploma the same way they want to get their driver's license.
I have a little bit of a different take on this than Calvin does, given that my background is social work and that I worked in children's division for 34 years. I worked with a lot of the families that children were struggling in the school system. And oftentimes, these families did not value education. There were other issues that were priorities for them because of the difficulties they were encountering. So I think that it's not just a school system problem, that if a child is not achieving, it's not because it's a bad teacher or a bad principal. It may be that's the problem. But I think we need to look more globally at this, that it's a county problem, it's a city problem, and it's a school problem. And then we need to be collaborating to make sure that our resources are working together to make the best situation for the families that live within our county and our city. And that is looking at all the resources. We spend a lot of money on social services, the county does, and there are some duplication within the school system and the county system. Hopefully we will coordinate them so that we're using our resources in the best way. So I think it's more than a school system problem. And hopefully Say Yes will help to do that, because I know the city and the county are in support of that program, and I'm hoping that the coordination will occur and that we're all working together, because some of our families need a lot of services so their children can succeed.
And I have to respond. Pat, we are saying the exact same thing, and I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Sorry.
No. I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's a shared responsibility. It isn't just a school district. But I place the emphasis on family. We live in a microwave society right now where we want everything instantly. And when I grew up, and there's actually some folks here in this audience that was very supportive to ensure that I stayed on the right track, that my family knew that at the end of the day, what would break down any door was the education, and that we certainly needed some of those resources that Pat just described. There were a variety of organizations, individuals that assisted my family as well as myself. You know, I see Ann Messenger. I got my first job through a program that Ann ran. But the focus was still on education in my household, and there are so many different distractions. How to put food on the table, how to clothing, proper housing, that sometimes the families are distracted. And we had those issues as well. But at the end of the day, my parents forced us to get our education. I think a part of that is missing today.
Well, real quick, my last question. Pat, you mentioned before things that the board doesn't have power to do. And I'm wondering, do you think that the board's ability to be an effective manager, to be a dynamic leader in this area of education is bounded, constrained in some way by the fact that you don't have independent fundraising authority, that your hands are tied in some ways with this?
I don't
know. You ask Pat.
Oh, you're glad me to...
I'm never bashful. Absolutely. Again, you talk about mayoral control and the council, and it is what it is. But there's a reason. The families who are leaving, you know, I was here when the county exec presented and spoke about the loss in population here at the city of Syracuse and the gain in the county over the past decade. There's a reason for it. I initially, as a banker, did mortgages, and families would say to me, I'm moving to the FM school district, not I'm moving to Fayetteville. So we certainly get that, you know, people want their kids to get the best education possible. But those budgets go out every year, and the significant majority of time, the taxpayers approve those budgets. That doesn't happen here, and it's control. you talk about the community having output and or input and making decisions on whether or not they want to support us. In that process, in that particular area, they really don't have that. As we continue to lose population, we're going to be considered a small city, and the taxpayers will have that opportunity. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But I would personally like to see that happen. You know, bring it to the taxpayers. I've always been a person, let me make the case. If I can't convince my colleagues on a particular issue, then I failed to do my job. If I have, then I had. So I certainly would support that. I know you asked Pat, but...
it takes me time to answer. The reason I hesitated, because I think this is such a complicated answer, because first, number one, I think school taxes should be based on income, not on property. So I would like to see the state change the way they fund schools, period. I do think that's important. Second of all, I'm not sure that if we put it to a vote to Syracuse residents, if they would want their taxes increased, because I'm a chair and a facilitator of neighborhood groups, so I work in neighborhoods that are fairly poor, and they're having trouble when their cable goes up a dollar because they can barely afford increases anymore because they're barely making it. They're working class families. They're elderly. They're on fixed incomes. So I hesitate. It's such a complicated issue for me because I really know a lot of the people in Syracuse can't afford even $10 raise in their taxes. So that's why I would prefer to see it based on your income. So I can't really answer you because I do think that if we had more funding available to us, that it would be helpful. We could buy smart boards and computers, and all the children would have access to all the new technology, and that would benefit our kids. But we live in a city that's poor. A lot of our residents are struggling. I have a conflict.
Sandra?
I don't have anything to add necessarily. I mean, I think, you know, it's an interesting issue. Would we like to have more control over our financial destiny? Probably so. But it would give, if that was the case, it would certainly put the onus on us to make our case. We would have to be out in the community much more like they do in the rest of the schools in the county. They have to get out and they go to a lot of community meetings to make their case about the Board of Education budget, the school district budget. And we probably should do a better job of that. You know, it's I don't think we're as clear to the public about what exactly is involved in the budget and where our revenue comes from and how the expenditures are appropriated. But, you know, we do have opportunities. We schedule community gatherings, and we may have two or three people show up outside of district staff. It's frustrating. You know, that we'll publish those dates in the newspaper. We'll put them sometimes on the television calendar, and we get very little attendance. And I don't know if it's because people feel disconnected because that decision does not rest with them. I wonder about that. If you really had to go into the voting booth in May and vote on your school district budget, you probably would be paying a little more attention in those months prior to that than what currently takes place. But I think, you know, we're all open to having some conversations about change and about, you know, changing the organizational structure or how we do business. There are lots of opportunities out there, but I want to emphasize there isn't one quick fix. That's really clear to me.
Okay, thank you. I think we have some questions.
When I worked downtown for 25 years, one of the things that I did was mentor. I mentored in a parochial school, and probably 30% of the kids in those schools had mentors, individual people from the community who were not paid that helped them besides the normal teachers. I would like to see a robust mentoring program in the public schools. I don't think that it exists at the present time. Resources are dwindling, and you are not going to be able to hire more teachers. In fact, you're going to let teachers go. And one of the ways to correct that is to have additional people, volunteers, people who don't have to pay the extra $10 a year taxes, but can give even something more to it. What are you going to do about it?
Substantial mentoring program in the school district. And then we have a coordinator, in fact, Mr. Williams, who does run the mentoring program. There are ample opportunities for volunteers to come in and assist in the classroom before school, after school, and during the day. And many of our business partners, almost every one of our schools, are very fortunate to have at least one, if not two, and sometimes three business partners. The business partners have made a considerable effort to be a part of their mentoring program and as a stimulus for their employees to be mentors in our schools. So we do, and we certainly appreciate it. It makes a tremendous difference in the classroom and in the school on a daily basis.
John, throughout my campaign, I did hear several citizens say that they were willing to mentor, but there seemed to be a barrier. So I also know that Lori's correct that there's a lot of mentoring happening and a lot of businesses that are doing that. I'm going to try to find out where the disconnect is because I have heard that several times. And right now I've been kind of really trying to learn so much and focusing on the budget. But that is something that I, in the curriculum committee, which I'm on, I will be looking towards where that barrier is. Because I do think you're right, that if we have to lay off teachers, which it looks like that's a possibility, then we will need to focus more on getting as many mentors as we can. And I don't know where the barrier is. So,
a few months ago, we had a speaker that came in and talked about the health department and how that could be helpful with the school district and collaboration there. And you had mentioned something with DSS, the same type of thing, in other words, on a county level. And I happened to be at a meeting about 4 months ago, and Joni Mahoney was there, and it was of school boards. I forget the name of the group, per se. And it was a dinner meeting. But anyway, she was the main speaker. And at the end of her presentation, she asked, because of dwindling resources and some other reasons, of these various school districts, which of them would be interested in doing a consolidation countywide. The city school district raised their hands. All the other school districts did not. We've been focusing here about mayoral control maybe coming in. Is there another possibility, and that's a countywide centralized school district? Since the city school district seemed to be interested in that, I just wonder if you could share where that might be productive.
I don't think that's likely to happen. And you're right, it was Commissioner Duell. This was a Central New York School Board meeting. It was a recognition night. We were giving awards and so forth, and we had asked the county executive to be a speaker. And there was a little bit of discussion about consolidation, and Ned Duell, who's on our school board, said, you know, I'd like to ask the group of probably 100 people there. There were a number of board members from all the surrounding county. You know, who would be interested in consolidation of schools and school districts? And all, I think there were five of us from the Syracuse City School District, and Dan Loengard, we all raised our hand. You know, we'd be happy to send, you know, it would be very easy to do with our four-quadrant system. You know, the Nottingham Quadrant could join with JD and FM, and the Fowler Quadrant could go to West Hill and West Jenny and so forth. And there has been, you know, I think a fair amount of public discussion about consolidation in the county. The county schools are being encouraged to do that for a number of reasons. There does not seem to be widespread support for that, and we understand why. You know, we're happy to do what we can for our children and for our students and the complexities that we have in our school district. But whether other districts want to help take that on is unlikely.
Speaking of mentoring programs, there are a number, and certainly down at Martin Luther King, we have a wonderful team that mentors 60 kids a week, including Mr. Corder's mother and several of the people that are in this room. But we have not seen any of the board members down in the school looking at our mentoring program. And I would like to ask about there is a director of volunteers in the school board, I mean in the school system. I would like to know what that individual does and how much they're involved in promoting mentoring programs in the schools.
That was mentioned in terms of my bio. I'm a member of 100 Black Men of Syracuse. Lou Clark, Marion Irvin. I see some folks here who are members as well, and there's a huge mentoring component. I'm actually, Lou Clark just asked me to come speak to the kids at Delaware in a couple of weeks. That's one of the schools that we brought on. And board members are very much active in terms of mentoring. You know, actually, I don't know how we find the time to do the things, but we do. His job solely is, as Lori mentioned, to bring mentors on board and volunteers and to have those dispatched throughout the schools. I think Pat said it best. If there's a disconnect, we certainly need to bridge that and find out where it is. If we have a school that's saying that that's a resource that they're lacking, that's something that we should be able to bridge relatively quickly.
Organizational effectiveness and structure. I believe that a principal is probably the key. If you've got a capable person that's able to really bring together teachers, have a sense of teamwork, you've really got something you're working with. My thought is that, number one, the bureaucracy that we have above the principal has two very serious, deleterious effects. Number one, you drain off the best principals that could be in those 38 schools. You have them now in administrative positions, and that is a significant negative. I would contend that they may be more valuable as gophers for the superintendent, but they are less valuable for the children needing to learn. Secondly, 140 or 150 administrators seems way too many. I've been in particular situations with principals where the bureaucracy says no, the principals buy it, and the bureaucracy's wrong and puts things really back. I think that there really has to be some attention paid to what just goes on and on and on, and reversing and putting the rewards on the principals as administrators, not moving them up into some bureaucratic position, which may have some benefit, but I would contend would have much less benefit than a principal.
The issue about the number of administrators, that's always an issue for hot debate. You know, are we administratively top-heavy? Do we have too many administrators? And that's something that the board looks at on a regular basis. Certainly administrative salaries are higher than teacher salaries. But we recognize we have a very large, complex district, and decisions have to be made. And I do have to tell you, the superintendent doesn't have any gophers. He has highly qualified, competent deputy superintendents, and we only have three. We have three deputy superintendents, and they're assigned to very specific areas with tremendous amount of responsibility. And these are people that are salaried people. They work at 6 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night if needed, and they work 6-7 days a week. The superintendent's in his office many nights until 11 o'clock, and he works all day Saturday and half a day on Sunday. And travels to conferences, has to go to speak, in addition to making swim meets and basketball games, in addition to meetings with the governor's office on the budget. These are all very complicated issues, and it can't be done entirely by one or two people in central office. And I also believe, I do agree, the principal is key to a school success. And we know that to have a strong leader to help encourage and build a cohesive unit in a school building is how the building is going to be successful. We need competent teachers in the classroom. We need extensive training for those teachers. And the principal is key to making that happen. Principals don't automatically get promoted to central office. They have to want to go. And we have occasionally promoted good principals because they want to expand their expertise, the opportunity to share their expertise with a larger group of administrators. What we're faced with is a shortage of good administrators and good principals. We have to grow our own, and we provide a lot of training opportunities. And we need to have mentors. You talked about mentoring. We need to have mentors for our administrators. So some of these really good principals have been promoted because they wanted to share their expertise with another growing pool of principals so we can help them be better principals.
Is it too early to talk about whether or not the Say Yes to Education program has been successful both in terms of the existing population of the schools and in attracting middle-class families back to Syracuse? I mean, do you have any data at all about what impact it's had?
There is some data out, and again, you ask about being too early. We have actually asked that question in one of our curriculum meetings. School enrollment has increased. The Syracuse City School District enrollment has increased, where throughout the county they decreased. You can draw the conclusion that some of the families have moved back. We've drawn the conclusion. We actually have research that shows families have moved back into the city because of Say Yes. We also have research that's shown more kids are going to college under Say Yes than they have in the past. So those are some direct things that we know, correlations we know right now because of Say Yes.
I would appreciate hearing your thoughts about the school in Rhode Island that fired the whole staff.
I would be more than happy to speak to it. That's a knee-jerk reaction. That suggests that the staff, the reason the kids aren't doing well is because of the staff, and I think that's unfair. Now, again, that I would need research, but someone asked in terms of our school district, the significant majority of our staff is very competent. They're very good. There are a whole host of issues. It's complex. Why kids aren't doing well? We have a very transient population. We have a population where 20% of our students are classified as special needs. So that would suggest if a kid didn't graduate in 4 years and this is how we're evaluated, even the kid graduated in 5 years and special needs kids have until they're 21 to graduate, those don't count towards our graduation rates. It is what it is. So the state would come in and say, well, you're not meeting your requirements in terms of graduation. We want you to eliminate that whole building. I don't think that's right. I think that plays well in terms of the press. I think it plays well in terms of politics. But in terms of addressing root issues, that's not the answer. You could bring in the blue ribbon staff. You can pick throughout the country and place them in that school. There are still issues that those families have when they get home. So in my mind, the root issues aren't being addressed.
I'd like to follow up just briefly on Arnie's question about teachers and teacher tenure. You mentioned that you don't have control over a lot of things. Is teacher tenure and the process that's used to decide, evaluate a teacher and decide whether he or she makes the grade, is that something that the school board has any input into?
We do in terms of before they get tenure. We've charged a superintendent. You talk about mentors. We have what's called a PAR program where we have veteran teachers mentoring people that we're bringing on. If they're not making the grade, for lack of no pun intended, the superintendent's not bringing those forth to the board in terms of them getting tenure. In terms of people who have tenure, it certainly is a little bit more challenging. But the superintendent has been looking for people who have tenure who haven't performed in the classroom to move them out, and we have done more of that in the past 3 years than we have in my 7 prior on the board. Again, it is certainly much more challenging, but we are actively looking to move folks out.
Right, so you would want to kind of get it at the front end because it is challenging.
I'm sorry. I'm a product of the Syracuse School District from elementary all the way up, and I still work volunteer in the district, and I've been on a lot of different study panels, and one of the things that come out and nobody talk about is why can't we tie the performance of the children in school, come to school, not be a behavior problem, to any social service benefit that the family receives? That'll solve 75% of your problem.
Understanding your question correctly, we can't do that because there's federal regulations, and that would actually be breaking the law. The law would have to change and say that certain families that are receiving social services or temporary assistance would have to follow certain rules in order to receive those benefits. And those are income eligible. And we cannot do that. I do know that there have been some states that have passed laws that have required that, but a county or a city can't do that. It has to be the federal or the state.
The Rhode Island case was mentioned earlier, and this morning they said that in Rhode Island, the superintendent has been meeting with the faculty, and the union is giving concessions about longer work days and things, so they are hiring people back. My question to you is, if you had no constraints, either from the state or from unions or anything, what is one thing each of you would like to see happen in the school district that you think would make an important difference?
I would like to see our staff live in the city. I'm fairly confident that we would see significant improvement in terms of the economic viability of the city, having those middle class incomes back in the city. There has been talk about forcing folks to do that, and I don't support that. I'd like people to react through the carrot and not the stick. And I believe that for me would be one thing I'd certainly like to see. I'd like to see the staff that's working with our students, that they also live in the city of Syracuse.
I think for me it would be the teacher in the classroom. I do think that that's critical. I think that, we've read statistics and, you know, some data over the years that if you have an ineffective teacher, let's say if you're a young child in third grade, and you have a somewhat ineffective teacher for 2 years in a row, you are destined to be behind and probably not graduate from high school. So I think what is critical for me is to have, and if we had an unlimited budget and unlimited resources and the doors were wide open, I would want to see a fully credited, certified teacher in every classroom with probably no more than, I want to be careful, 18 to 20 students at the most, but certified in their field. And that's not always the case for us. You know, we have been working towards that, particularly quite vigorously in the last couple of years, to make sure that all of our staff are certified. And it's a little more complicated for the elementary school teachers, too. We're asking them to be experts in everything, experts in social studies and math and reading and science and social awareness and good manners and, you know, how to eat well at the cafeteria table. We're asking them to do an awful lot with, you know, a lot of little children in a short period of time. So I think for me it would be, you know, a quality, outstanding teacher who had some experience in urban education, a couple of years of urban education experience before they came to teach in our classroom, too.
Well, I agree with Calvin, definitely, that I think our employees need to live in the city. I had gone to a training program one time, and there were several superintendents there. And one of the superintendents said that she thought one of the reasons that the children were doing so well is that the teachers all lived in the same community and were committed to those children, that they didn't live, they didn't work there and then leave, that there was a real commitment. But I would, along with that, I would really like to have enough money to expand our PAR program, that it not only works and mentors new teachers, but experienced teachers. I've spoken to many teachers, and they're working several hours overtime. They're buying supplies. They're buying clothes for the kids. They're going above and beyond. However, they get worn out. And I think that those teachers would benefit by being a mentor to someone else so they get a relief. We don't have the funding to do that now, and so that's not possible. But also with a PAR mentor, you would actually see if a teacher is not doing their job, and we could document so that we would have them leave and go to another career. So I think it's very difficult to just judge teachers on a child's, how they're doing in a test, because our situation is so complicated. There are so many different families with so many different problems that you can't just blame the teacher. So I would like to see something like that where we could actually identify those teachers that are wonderful and those teachers that are having problems.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for serving in a position like this where you're working very hard and getting very, very little credit. I'd like to make a modest proposal, albeit somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I think for urban schools, what you need to do is put some fences and barbed wire around the schools, maybe a guardhouse or two, so you can get the same type of funding per inmate or per student as prisoners get. And I suggest that that would probably lead to a tremendous reduction in the crime rate in the future and save the state a heck of a lot of money.
I think probably 8 years ago, I'll never forget what the speaker said, that we want to send our children to Penn State, not the state pen. And, you know, I thought, I'll never forget that. I mean, that's really, we want to make sure that, as Calvin said, you know, that our students become taxpayers, not tax eaters. Is that the expression you said?
Could you say a word about the charter schools? Whether or not it has any connection to the Syracuse School Board, whether it should have a connection to the Syracuse School Board, and whether you encourage charter schools.
You know, I'm in the corporate world. Competition is great from my perspective. I think it's fine. As I said when we began the coffee party this morning, that whatever's going to educate our kids the best, I'm supportive. What I don't support, we're not on a level playing field. Charter schools really are public-private schools. They can cherry pick some of our better students, and if they're having issues, behavioral issues, as I mentioned, 20% of our population special needs, you know, we end up getting them back, and the funding isn't equitable. They're really taking the money from Syracuse City School District to fund those. So I personally am supportive. If they can do a better job educating the kids academically, that's fine, but I would just want the playing field level.
Yeah, I mean, the funding for charter schools follows the students, so the state aid per student goes to the charter school, but it comes out of our pocket, and I believe this year it's close to $5 million. It's $5 million. We're facing an $18 million shortfall.
Actually, $40 million. We've reduced it to 18. We reduced it to 18 because of staff reductions and program reductions.
Better than 40.
And I appreciate it. But proper perspective, it really was 40.
Yeah.
And with some strategies we put in place, we got it to 18. Now we have to find the additional 18.
So, I mean, that's discouraging. But, there's a lot of talk in the community. Certainly our president is even talking about charter schools, and his new education secretary came from Chicago, is very supportive of charter schools. And in some cities, there are a lot of charters. Buffalo has, I think, 20-plus charter schools. In Syracuse, we only have two, I believe, at the current time. The one high school and one elementary school, something like that.
You know, Frank, one other thing to your question. Again, we've used the word magic bullet a couple of times today. You can look at the charter school performance throughout the state. It isn't better than the public schools. So we create these things and we do some different things. But here in Syracuse, charter schools have been around, Laura, you think 5-6 years?
Longer, I think.
Longer?
Yeah.
Okay. We initially had three. One actually closed because of academic performance. And this was a couple of years ago. But when they bring them up for renew, the second one, the renewal was 3 or 5 years. They gave them a 1-year renewal because they were concerned about the performance, and the other one now is doing well. So again, two thirds of there were three initially, two thirds of them struggled.
All right. Well, I want to thank you again, all Grant Reher, our moderator, Laurie Menken, Pat Bodie, Calvin Corridors, and we look forward to getting to know all the school board better and about the work you do. Thanks.